This time I want to talk about traveling. I'm sorry again for the title. I don't, really don't have time in my problems anymore, but I want to talk about traveling water waves. And this, instead of an a priori regularity result, is going to be an inexistence theorem. And if you plug in our last session's a priori regularity result, you will have an existence theorem for analytic solutions. But analyticity will play a relatively small role today. So I think I'll just call it traveling water waves. And I want to say first off that this is work, so it's joint work, and it's kind of a long-term project, really, with Dave Nichols, who was, in fact, had a hand in doing this as a graduate student at Brown. And he's been at Minnesota, and now he's at Notre Dame. Okay, so let's see. I'm not going to assume that you are at all the previous talks, and I'm going to draw my famous drawing again, which is, here is the domain of a fluid that I want to talk about. So y is a special vertical direction, and it's special because gravity is pulling down. And then x is a horizontal direction. But now I want x to be, I'm going to make a sort of perspective plot here, and then x is going to be a position vector in R, n minus 1, and it's an n-dimensional problem. So it's an n-dimensional problem. So that says when, well, we live in three dimensions. Reminds me of a Feynman joke, but we live in three dimensions. So that means xy is in three dimensions, so x is in two dimensions. So x is in two for us. But also, it's a classical thing to do to study wave motion, which is constant in one direction, partly because it's a little bit easier, or actually a lot easier. So that you can ignore that direction, and then you have x and r1. So just to emphasize, this is dimension 3 problem, and this is a dimension 2 problem, because there's always y, of course. But if you're a string theorist, you might want x to be in r10. I mean, I don't know. So in some sense, this is a theory independent of dimension, and in fact, that was the big step. Two dimensions has complex variables, and it's a little special. And so to get it out of two dimensions and into techniques which handle 3 and higher was the big point. So it's 3 and higher, and mostly it's 3. I haven't quite gotten my drawing up yet, and now I realize that I could have asked for colored chalk. I found some. Because it is water waves, and I hate to write, and I don't want to make it in the color, and I'd hate to write it yellow. Water should be blue, of course. So here's now a free surface. So it's part of the problem to find the behavior of this free surface. And there may be a bottom. So that stands for bottom minus h. And last time I said I was part of the Flat Earth Society, that it's an infinite flat bottom, an infinite flat basin. Okay, we're studying waves in the middle of a lake and not near the shore. It's a finite lake, I know, but we're going to be mathematicians and pretend it's infinite. This is the thing that one does. Okay, now we have a picture, and also, which belies my California origins, I'm going to make the surface a graph. I know everyone who sees surf movies knows that water doesn't live on a graph. It does all sorts of interesting things, and you can do all sorts of interesting surfing moves on it. But for us, and my solutions, I'm going to say that this surface is given by a graph. If it's not, I have to change coordinates. And that we can do too, but for now it's going to be a graph, and this height is going to be eta of x, and it will depend on t. Okay, so the surface is given by y is equal to eta of x and t. I've given you a domain. I've not given you any equations. So, so to give some equations, my fluid is going to be incompressible. I'm not sure how many times this has been written on the board in the course of these lectures, but this is an incompressible fluid. And I'm going to make the oceanographer's approximation and say it's also an irrotational fluid. And that's not good just behind ship's propellers or near a rowboat's blades, or maybe when you look at the entire North Atlantic as a whole, because there's going to be large-scale or small-scale rotation. But in a lake like Lake Ontario, I used to say Narragansett Bay and the San Francisco Bay, it's not so bad. So this is our approximation of the moment. Of course, an irrotational fluid in a simply connected domain is the gradient. It says that U is the gradient of a function. So that's going to be gradient of a potential phi. And then when I plug in incompressibility condition, those two imply that this is a harmonic function. So I'm really looking for U, which is a vector field, which is, I'm giving things in Eulerian coordinates, which is a gradient of a harmonic function. So that's one of my equations already. Here I can use yellow. And in fact, maybe I should have left a little room to say that another piece of the equations are going to be when I encounter, when the fluid flows next to a hard boundary, like the bottom, I don't want the fluid to move into the bottom. I want the fluid to have tangential component only, so no normal component. Well, the normal component of U is the normal component of phi. I want that to vanish. That's Neumann boundary conditions. So on a hard boundary, the normal derivative of phi, I want to vanish. Oh, and that, I'm going to put that here. The normal derivative of phi vanishes on hard boundaries. Oh, excuse me for a moment. I don't want to tread on this the entire lecture. Okay, so what counts are actually the boundary conditions at the top. And you see there's actually no time dependence nor nonlinearity in the problem yet. Questions? I'm not making a Hamiltonian yet. That's my next blackboard. Oh, this is the velocity potential. This is not the stream function. Stream function is a two-dimensional object. Multiple stream functions, if they are good, could be higher dimensional objects, but I'm not going to do that. This is the velocity potential. So boundary conditions, so this is on top. Surface, free surface, boundary conditions. The analog of no flow into the boundary says that the surface is defined by the position of a particle which flows on the surface. That particle can never experiences forces that push it into the body of water, body of the fluid. And so a way of saying that is in terms, differentially in terms of eta and phi, is d eta t is equal to dy phi minus dx eta dot dx phi. And the dot is to remind us that it's a X is a vector, is a position vector. And then finally a physical condition, which reflects the fact that these come from Euler's equation, is that d by dt of phi is equal to minus g eta. These two are to hold on the surface. Y is equal to eta of x and t. Minus 1/2 grad phi squared. And there's one other force that I'd like to add here, which is, remember we had surface tension in the previous talk. I also want to say that it's possible to have surface tension. And now I want to solve this equation, everything in yellow. That is, these and these equations. So again, the notation is g is the acceleration of gravity. That appears here. So g is the... C sigma has something to do with the surface tension. So if I take sigma over, I think it's GH squared, that's the bond number. So it describes how strong surface tension, how strongly a role surface tension plays. H is the mean curvature. So H of eta, if I get the sign right, is minus the divergence of grad eta over 1 plus, let me see, it's the x derivative of eta over x derivative of eta squared, square root. So it's the mean curvature of the free surface, and this is a restoring force due to the mean curvature. And also, what's h? H is the depth. So I need h to be bigger than 0, so I have some water. But I could be as much as infinity. So it could be infinitely deep, that's allowed, and it's part of the theory. But it could be finitely deep, it just can't be 0 depth. You might take a limit at 0 depth, but that was my talk 2 weeks ago. So let's leave that, let me rest from that one. And these are the equations I want to start. Now, what do I want to see as x gets large? And I'd like to talk in this particular talk not about solutions on all of solutions on all of space that will decay at infinity. I'd rather want to talk about periodic patterns. So lateral boundary conditions as x changes. So lateral I'm going to look at periodic solutions. So the way to do that neatly in n minus 1 dimensions is you take a lattice, which is a subset of Rn minus 1, and just make sure that it has a, what do you say, it's complete, meaning it's an n minus 1 dimensional lattice. And then you take any gamma in that lattice, and then you want the surface to repeat itself if you translate by gamma. So that's what it means to be periodic with respect to those boundary conditions. And also I want the potential phi to repeat itself. But of course potentials are not physical quantities, so they don't really obey Galilean, or the expression of Galilean invariance has them plus gamma dot x. That's what it is. That's the expression of Galilean invariance. And furthermore, I'm finally saying this is a time-dependent problem, and studying this evolution is, say, what Doug Wright told us about last week. But I want to study special solutions of this that are, in some sense, simpler. They're persistent, but they're simpler. And that is, I want to look at the traveling waves, so I'm finally making that assumption. So traveling waves, and they're going to do the following. They'll satisfy all these equations and boundary conditions, but as well, they're going to be very simple solutions of this. That is, I want to have eta of x minus tc. I wanted to say it the following way. I want eta, which, as far as I've stated now, to be a general function of x and t, I want it to only depend on the combination x minus tc, which is to say, if I translate at a velocity c with horizontally, then it's stationary. So I want solutions of that form. And similarly, I want something for phi. So phi of x, y, t actually has the special form phi of x minus tc, y, and t, but of course it's a potential, so we have to adjust. Okay? Yes? Why? C is a vector. X is an Rn minus 1. C is an Rn minus 1. And I've been carefully saying velocity, not speed. And I carefully put T, the scalar, in front of C as a vector, even. But if you like 2, you can keep it in 2. Which C is not which C? This C is this C. This just doesn't look very handsome here. I think I'm all right. So, with all that, I'd like to state a theorem. Our theorem. So, theorem. Theorem 1, and it has two parts. So, one is when the dimension n equals 2. Let me say it this way. Let 0 less than or equal to sigma is the strength of the surface tension, less than infinity. So a positive sigma. Then there exist solutions of my yellow equations, which I guess I'll call equations 1. This is part of equation 1, and this is also part of equation 1. And this is also part of equation 1. And I guess this is also part of equation 1. And dimension, so that's dimension 2, and dimension n greater than or equal to 3, let 0 less than sigma, less than plus infinity. Then there exist solutions of my yellow equation 1. And of course, the difference between dimensions 2 and dimensions 3 and higher is that I'm not allowed surface tension to be equal to 0. Well, I would like to, but that's still open, as far as I'm concerned. And that's interesting. It's a small divisor problem, even for a stationary problem. So that's a remark, is that n greater than or equal to 3, sigma equals 0, small divisors. And in fact, one of the jobs I have today is to tell you why and what that means. Okay? And then let me also say that this is a very easy theorem because 0 is a solution. So we could prove it over t. So what I really mean is there are non-trivial solutions. I want to discuss their behavior. An n-dimensional solution could be a one-dimensional solution, which is constant in all the other dimensions, this sort of thing. Yes? Eta is 0 and phi is equal to cx. Sorry, gamma x will do. So phi is equal to x, sorry, will do. Cx for any c. Cx for any c. Then I have a problem here because it's phi is supposed to be dot a linear function. So there's a little bit of a problem here. There's a problem here, but let me not get involved with that. That's a constant. I'm not sure it's actually gamma. It might be related to C. I'm sorry about that. Okay? I want to show you that the solution of the set of solutions is non-empty by showing you pictures. And if I can do this really fast, I think the pictures are nice. So here's a picture taken at Penn State. Can people see that? It's a little bit too much light in here. It's kind of the softest picture. Maybe just for the whole picture sequences. And this is their wave, the three-dimensional wave tank at Penn State, and these are pictures taken by Diane Henderson and Joe Hammack. And this is a bar in front of a wave tank, and this is the wall, glass wall of a wave tank, and this white is the bottom of a wave tank. And here are the free surface intersecting that glass wall, and you see hexagonal patterns in it. And then there are caustic caused by the lighting, and those are hexagonal patterns down here. So we're looking for hexagonal patterns. That's pictures of solutions I'd like to see. And here's another picture from that wave tank. That was in 2000. This is in 2001 when they're actually the paddles are all working and they're measuring and everything. And the picture is taken with the those are the paddles, and this picture is taken with the waves coming toward us. It's actually a deep water wave tank, so it's the depth is 20-25 centimeters. It's relatively deep, and they're coming toward us, and there are periodic patterns. And here's a picture out of a JFM article, Journal of Fluid Mechanics article in 1982, quite widely distributed. It's a different type of periodic wave patterns. I find these very beautiful crescent-shaped waves moving in that direction. M.Y. Sue was the principal experimenter with additional collaborators there. Those are very beautiful, so it'd be nice to talk about these type of solutions. And I have lots of amusing pictures, but time goes fast, so I'm not going to necessarily show them all. Okay? Except maybe at T. So, let's see. I'm wise. I can get this up fast. And the light's back on. Thanks. So, there's a brief history of results. I mean, this is a very long-standing problem, and this has had work on it for many years. One of the earliest results I know is by Levi Civita, which is a 1924 paper on the case dimension n is equal to 2. He introduced complex variables, and there's lots of complex variables techniques in it, and of course it actually pervaded the subject for a long period. So his case is zero surface tension and infinite depth. But actually, Dirk Strouk, who was MIT geometer, who was a postdoc of his with Levi Civita in 1924-25, and he did the case n equals 2, sigma equals 0, finite h. And these are both Mas and Allen papers. And it's one of these east-west difficulties of communication that A.I. Nekrasov in 1921, using a different setup, also using complex variables, n equals 2, sigma equals 0, and I believe h equals plus infinity. And it was only really come out, I think it was published in English in 1967, in the preprint series of the Madison Institute. To get the surface tension in the picture, so if this is still dimension equals 2 surface tension, so sigma greater than 0, Eberhard Zeidler has not a paper but a book in 1971. So again, n equals 2, and he had big surface tension. 1/3 is an interesting bond number. And that was to avoid avoid multiplicity of eigenvalue. And Tom Beale, in 1979, admitted small bond number, but it made the explicit demand. So he had all bond numbers below 1/3 as well as above 1/3, but explicitly demanded not resonant, so to speak. By which I mean that there are no multiple eigenvalues in the problem. And actually, in the two dimensions, still n equals 2, you can either have a single eigenvalue or it can be double. That's the only thing you can have for dimensions equal to 2. And so that actually could be analyzed. So there's M. Jones and J. Tolland did that analysis in 1985. And some of the solutions, not all, but some of the solutions are what have been discussed in physics as Wilton ripples. I think if you have your glass full of wine and you rub your finger around the rim and it wiggles, there are some ripples that are normal to the boundary, and those are similar to Wilton ripples, I've been told. So n equals 3, not too much is known. There's a 1981 paper of Reeder, let's see, and M. Shimbrut, who has a Canadian connection, I think to escape a divorce settlement. He moved to University of Victoria, is what I've heard. He died tragically about 10 years ago. He has positive surface tension. He has, it was after that, so maybe some other woman was responsible for the heart attack. He has special domains, which are what I'll call, you take R2, this is the surface, because in three dimensions the surface is R2, mod a lattice, and those are tori. These are tori, and I just want to say what those look like. Well, they look like incoming waves. So here's X1, here's X2, Y is into the board. They're incoming waves, and then there's a perfect reflection. So the fundamental domains are these things, or if I do it around the axis, they're called symmetric diamonds. And their effect is the velocity of the solution is along the direction of the x1 axis. And what you can do is you can take this, because of the geometry, you can take this out and put a wall, and it satisfies Neumann conditions. And it's like a... Is that